I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Who are you?
I'm no one.
I was raised to do one thing. Nothing to fight for.
Nothing will stand in our way. I will finish what you started.
Hello and welcome to the 11th episode of the AI Movie Night. I'm your host, Joe Simpson, and tonight I'm joined by two great guests to discuss all things Star Wars The Force Awakens. We felt people had had enough time, everybody who wants to see it will have now seen it, and it's time to really catch up what we thought about it and discuss all things The Force Awakens. So firstly, I'm joined again by the podfather himself, Gags Tandon. How are you, mate?
I'm good, Joe. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. Looking forward to hear your thoughts on this one. I remember last time, obviously, you were the only one out of the three of us who'd seen it, and you were bursting to tell us about it. So
I know. It's like you drained it out of me. I mean, no, it'll be fine.
Oh, great. So hopefully you're still ready to go with all that knowledge and insight. So look forward to hearing it.
Well, I don't think you'll be as geeky as the other one, but it'll be good.
It'd have to go some to beat that, wouldn't it, in terms of geekiness? But we'll try. Yeah. I'm also joined again by Andy Wales, host of the excellent Reds Review podcast. How are you doing, Andy?
I'm doing really well, mate. I've been really looking forward to this. I tell you what, the moment that I got out of the cinema, that I actually, when I'd just seen this film, the first thing I did was WhatsApp Gags.
Oh, brilliant. Good on you.
I was bursting to watch it after we did the last set of pods, and so I'm really looking forward to this tonight.
Oh, great. I'm looking forward to hearing all the things you like about it tonight. So thanks to you both again for joining me. I'm going to get straight into it because obviously we normally have a lot to say, us three. So I'm going to go straight into it and start with you, please, Gags. How good was it to see Star Wars in the cinema again?
It was unbelievable. It was, I don't think I couldn't put it into words because, okay, well, I'm going to have to try because you're asking me the question.
I hope so.
But yeah, there was so much excitement and there was a bit of nerves as well, that because I was watching it really early, like one of the first people in the country to watch it, maybe in the world. I think it was out in the UK first, in IMAX, that I didn't want it to fail. I didn't want it to be awful. So there was a bit of nerves, but there was so much excitement. And I knew that because I was just watching all of the other films with you guys and doing the pods on it, that I'd hyped myself up so much that I was worried about disappointment as well. But yeah, when that music kicked in, dude, Man, I don't know. We're geeks, aren't we? We're fucking uber geeks. You know, we get geeked the fuck out of this podcast. And I swear, it just took over. It takes over you. And if you've been a fan for a long time and you love this genre and you love this brand of Star Wars, then you would feel it in that first. And when those credits come up, when that story comes up of episode 7 flashes up and the music goes, man, there's a tingle, I think. There's a tingle through your body, and it's amazing to see it back. And it's amazing that they're going to do a movie a year, apparently. Mix it up, you know, with these and some other stories, new stories. Darth Vader apparently coming back and stuff. So, yeah, it's an exciting time to be a Star Wars fan. Joe.
Yeah, totally agree with all that. When, as you say, when you know that music comes on and that opening scroll, you're just transported to another universe. And like we said last time, back to your childhood almost. And I think Andy was someone who definitely felt that. What was it like for you seeing it in the cinema again, Andy?
Oh, fan bloody tastic! It was great. I took my kids with me to watch it as well. So it was. I was transported back. It was me being a kid again. You know, that moment, like Gag said, the music hits. You're just like, oh, here we are. And you're back to being a kid watching it. And it is, there is something special about watching it in the cinema with, you know, the big screen there and then the sound and bag of sweets and the drink, everything. It's just, it just adds to it. And it's, and it was just great. Such a great feeling to, you know, to have it there again and it be fresh and new and exciting. And I think especially because after we've done them pods, it really ramped me up for going to see it, you know, just hyped even more. So it was a great feeling. It really was.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more with all of that. And I think it's lovely that you were able to take your kids as well, because they really are some of the best family films, aren't they? Obviously, it's clear that we all think it was a really good film and we all enjoyed it. Can I ask you, Andy, firstly, did it feel, obviously, we know that start, that magic hooked us, but did it feel like a Star Wars film to you? Because, for example, for me, the prequels never really felt truly like a Star Wars film. Did this feel like one to you?
Yeah. What it did is it somehow managed to recapture some of the magic from the original movies. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, maybe that's because it had a new director, you know, who shared the passion of being a fan of those original movies. You know, it didn't feel like a Hollywood movie. If you know what I mean, it wasn't like the prequels. There were some Hollywood names in there, wasn't there?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And this didn't, it was like the originals where they were virtual unknowns and it just seemed to, I mean, J.J. Abrams just seemed to capture that magic and that mystique and that innocence and of the originals. It did have that kind of feel to it, even though there were some dark elements that we'll probably get onto a bit later in it, but it did have something about it that was more akin to the originals. And you know, my expectations, I was like Gags, you know, you were a bit worried about how it was going to turn out because you were so excited for it. But I think, you know, in a way, because the prequels were quite underwhelming, you maybe set your expectations a little.
I think you're talking shit, yeah? You know, they were shit.
Well, no.
The prequels were shit.
Yeah, the first one was. They got better as they went along, but they were pretty underwhelming. So, you know, your expectations are kind of maybe a little bit lowered because of that. But but going in and it hit everything and it felt special again and it just encaptured that magic. And everything that you really enjoyed about the originals, it was back, and I thought everyone involved did such a good job with it.
Yeah, I think you've touched on a great point there as well. Where you mentioned with J.J. Abrams, I think George Lucas, obviously, you know, for me, he's a genius. He created this world. You know, it may have gone wrong eventually, but he created that world and did so much to make it so great and so magical. But maybe he lost perspective, or just sometimes your creative well may dry up, or you might suit different types of things later in life. Whereas, as you said, I think
the geekiness took over, Joe. Well, the geekiness took over. He went too much CGI, didn't he?
He got too clever
for himself.
I think maybe some of the things he loved, because I think he thinks Empire is the worst of definitely the worst of the, or originally thought Empire was the worst of the Star Wars original trilogy. So I wonder if some of the things he loves are slightly different to what most people love.
I'm glad he sold it.
Well, I'm glad now, but obviously I'm thankful for all he did. But Abrams was a fan, and I think, as well as being obviously a really talented guy, and I think he was probably in love with a lot of the same things that the fans are in love with. So he was able to bring them back, but also, as you mentioned before, Andy, bring some new and fresh things to it. What about yourself, Gags? Did it feel like that original Star Wars universe to you as well?
Yeah, it was really similar. And that's probably one of the big criticisms of it, that it probably fits in well here, Joe, that it was very similar to A New Hope. You know, very, very similar. They had pretty much, I mean, if you go through it, they had a death, you know, of a father figure type role. Yeah. They had the history of Darth Vader was basically just a massacre, wasn't it? And the history of the guy in this movie was a massacre as well. So there's loads, isn't there? And then obviously there being a Force Awakening is like A New Hope, isn't it? Of the one star who's going to become a Jedi. So yeah, a Death Star, a Star Killer in this one.
Yeah.
Interestingly, Star Killer was supposed to be Luke Skywalker's name, wasn't it? Star Killer. So they used that.
I'm glad they changed it.
Yeah. Luke Starkiller. Jesus Christ. Just wouldn't work with it. Yeah. So, there were a lot of, similarities to A New Hope. However, despite those similarities, I thought that they did enough in the movie with the new characters to give it the freshness. So whilst the story was similar, I could look past it because of the way they brought across the new characters and the way that it was told and the nostalgia. Because obviously when you watch A New Hope, it's the first one.
Yeah.
This movie has an advantage, a build up of six stories. And what it adds to this movie is immeasurable, because you've got, you know, Han Solo and Chewbacca, and you've got their relationship. You've got everything in there already. So yeah, it did it justice. And even though it was a bit similar in terms of storyline, which they could have made a little bit more original, I think I looked past it, one, because I'm a diehard fan, and two, because again, I think that they brought in enough characters and enough questions at the end, Joe, which we'll talk about later, to make you want more.
Yeah, no. I agree. That was a key part of it, feeling like a Star Wars universe, as you say, to have those, you know, some of those similarities at least. And I think, although, as we say, it has had criticisms for that, I know for myself, it probably needed some of that just to ground it in that world and to give it that basis.
Do you think it was too much though, Joe? Like, I mean, Andy as well, I'll ask you a question on the flip side. There was a bloodied emperor. There was a Death Star type thing, which was bigger. It didn't make sense that it was sucking life out of the sun or whatever. I mean, is that even bloody possible? But obviously you don't even think about the logistics, or you don't think about the science of it. But what I mean is, could they have done something a bit more original in terms of what it was? Because when you do look back, you do think, if you jump out of the blind, you know, for fan bias, you do think, could have been a bit more, could have done a little bit, JJ, you know?
What are your thoughts on that, Andy?
I don't know. I'm kind of with you, Joe, in that you need a little bit of familiarity just to ground it, you know.
But there was plenty, Andy. I thought there was loads of familiarity. Maybe the one change could have been that.
It didn't. there were similarities and elements of it, but it wasn't. I didn't feel like I was watching A New Hope all over again.
It
was a new movie. There was different things to it, and I mean the thing is, if it had gone the other way and made it completely and utterly different and miles away, people would feel disenfranchised that this is not our Star Wars. What have you done with our Star Wars? So I think perhaps to really make a sound judgment, we've got to wait until the other ones come out and see where it goes.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think it came pretty damn close to getting the perfect balance from my perspective, considering all the hype and all the pressure on it. I think it, like you both touched on, it needed to have some of those touchstones. Maybe the Starkiller base was a step too far because it was exactly the same thing virtually.
I mean, one really stupid pit joke when he brings the general, whatever his name is, what's his name? General
Hux, is it?
Hux, yeah, Hux. Fucking again, the name's a bit stupid, but yeah, Hux comes on. Sounds like some sort of dog food to me, or some powder or something. Anyway, Hux looks, Hux comes on, and he gets the whole of his army on, or the whole of the First Order on, to shoot this planet down. Yeah. And then, right, you've just become, like, the number one target. And the whole of your army is in one place.
I don't think they're all there, in fairness. I think they're spread out.
It seemed like it on that
one base. But I don't think they were all there. But I know what you're saying. I just think it struck a good balance. And for all those touchstones, and maybe that was a step too far.
Yeah.
But for all that, I'd say it did have, like, we've never had that Stormtrooper perspective before. No. And the new characters, whilst there were some similarities to some of the older characters, there was enough there to make it a staging ground to go elsewhere. And I think, like Andy said, for this first one, you need a lot more of that just to ground it in that world before now it can go off in completely new directions if it wants to.
Yeah, it
I think knowing you both, I'm sure you're the same. We're all looking forward to seeing what those new directions are in the future. But yeah, maybe a tad too much, but I think overall a pretty good balance, generally speaking.
No complaints. I was playing devil advocate for
what
I've heard from people, and I wanted to hear what you thought, but I loved it. I thought it was a great movie. I'd watched it three times, once with a colleague and then once with my elder daughter, and then the second time with both daughters. So yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, I could tell that. I'm just going to look now. Obviously it leads on to from there to, you know, we got to see some of the older characters again, like Han, Chewie and the Falcon. What was it like to see them again, Gags?
Mate, when they came on the screen, you know, especially when I watched it with my eldest, as soon as Han Solo walked on, and she's only 11, but she's religiously watched the other six with me over the last 2 years. I've got her really into it. And it's kind of taken over the house, Star Wars. It's on their iPads, iPods, and they've both got lightsabers, you know, the toy ones, plastic ones, that they've hurt their thumbs with because they keep hitting each other accidentally. So I'm getting told off.
Gags, I didn't think they were real ones, mate. Don't worry.
You know what I mean? Sorry. Silly me. I'm just too much of a nerd. I thought you might be literally Joe. But yeah, you know what I mean? So it's taken over the girls, and it's taken over the, like, nothing prouder for me for a dad to have his girls into Star Wars, proper nerded out. And basically when he walked in to the Falcon and he said, "Chewie, we're home," you know, she'd seen the advert, but she was waiting for the scene to happen. And it was such a good scene for it to come on, because they're mixing with the new cast, and it's just a brilliant scene. There's so many comical bits in that scene as well, with Chewbacca just shrugging his shoulders at everything they said about Han. You know, everything they said, he's like, is he the general? And he just keeps shrugging his shoulders and making a funny noise, and you're just basically in hysterics because it's that relationship. I'm not giving him any credit. He's my mate, but fuck that. I'm not doing that. You know what I mean? It's just, it's so brilliant when he comes in and they both come in and he's looking older, but he's still got the same, you know, dress sense. You just go back in time.
You do.
Same humour as well.
Exactly. It was like It was like old friends turning up, wasn't it, really?
Yeah. And yeah, he's trying to convince Chewbacca that he is the right... You know, when they're talking to all those gangs. He's like, it is me. I did do that. I did. And he's like...
Yeah, Chewbacca, Han's the cocky one, and Chewbacca's always the one trying to bring him back down to earth. And, you know, with a bit of reality about what's been going on for the last few years. What about yourself, Andy?
Yeah, I love seeing him again. I was just smiling now, just thinking about it. It's as soon as you see him on camera, it's just like, you know.
It
just takes you back, does it? Again, it transports you back. It's that, you know, it's a familiar old face. It's like John Barnes and Kenny Dalglish walking out at Anfield. You know what I mean? It's like that warm feeling inside. And the thing is, they still have that charisma, and they still have that chemistry between them as characters on screen as well, and even the Falcon as well.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, just to see that, and I mean that's. We're talking about. Gags keeps telling me I'm a nerd here, and I'm thinking, am I geeking? Am I a nerd? And then I'm thinking, yeah, well, I was pretty chuffed to see a spaceship on the movie screen. So yeah, I guess I am a bit of a nerd, really.
And but, it was great how it was still all battered and dirty, wasn't it? It was still, you know what I mean? It was the same Falcon it'd always been, wasn't it?
Ooh, there's a bit of a change to it though. The antenna changed.
Oh yeah, it's changed that up. I'm talking inside here.
Yeah. The antenna changed. The one thing changed on it because it flew off, didn't it? When was it Lando took it off?
Oh yeah.
So it's got a rectangular one now.
Little minor details like that are really important, I think. You know, for continuity and
because
there will be people, if they'd have had the original, there'll be people who would be pulling up and saying, "Well, I remember in episode 6, you know, 1:35." 1 hour 35 minutes and 46 seconds, you know, and it's these little, it's the little things that really, really matter in detail, and that was just one of them little things. But I think the whole movie, though, the way that they used the original characters was just so smart, because they used Han and Chewie as they were kind of passing the torch. You know, it was right in front of your eyes. The torch was being passed. So you didn't have new characters being shoved down your throat. It was organic, the change as the movie went on. So it was great to see them, and I just loved the way that they used them.
I thought Leia was disappointing a little bit, obviously because she's changed so much and she can't really move her face very much anymore. But I just didn't think they could get much more out of her. So if she's killed off in the next episode, it'd probably be good for the series, to be honest.
Well, I'd like to say I hope she's not killed off, but I know what you're killed off. I hope she's not killed off, but I know what you mean.
She doesn't add much now.
I think she'd had a lot of problems, hadn't she? And I think having her there was important, but I know what you mean. I think she'd probably be in private, be the first to say, she's been out of full-time acting for a long, long time, and, you know, various other reasons why it's not ideal for her. But I know what you mean. So I wouldn't be surprised if she doesn't have the greatest of roles again in future. But it is another one of those touchstones, as Andy said, to like hand over to the newer characters. And that leads us perfectly on to some of those newer characters. Andy, what were your thoughts on John Boyega's performance and, of course, his character of Finn?
See, well, I liked all the good guy characters. I thought they all came across really well. You know, the way they introduced them and their portrayal, you know, because the John Boyega and Daisy Ridley, I don't know who they are. I don't recall seeing them in anything before. I might well have seen them in something. I don't know. I can't recall them if I have, you know, and here they are, you know, as lead characters in a huge movie franchise, you know, the biggest movie franchise in the world. And they pulled it off like that, you know. They were natural. They had it was like, you know, your main characters going back again to New Hope, you know, coming at you, you know, people you're not familiar with seeing, but just looked so natural, and they just seemed at ease with who they were and who they were portraying. And I liked all of them. I thought they did really well, and the character Finn, though, he had, I don't know, he, I think he portrayed it well. He had just like a little bit of, like a glint to him, you know, because he was that, you know, the stormtrooper, just that little thing, wasn't it? You know, I'm getting you out because it's the right thing to do. It's, which is kind of, you know, like, oh, you know, that boring, really good guy type of thing. But he had a kind of a bit of a glint to him, or not quite a Han Solo glint, but that kind of like chirpiness about him. And I think he did really well, and I enjoyed the character.
I think you touched on something there as well. I think it was good because he was like, you know, he has got a heart, and he was quite a funny character as well. And the bit you mentioned there, I think was good, because I think it was half true what he said, you know, because it's the right thing to do. But I think Poe actually says, you need a pilot, don't you? And he's like, yeah, I need a pilot. So it was like, it was half true that it was the right thing to do, but I think he also wanted the pilot. So I think you're right. That's a bit like a Han Solo thing, isn't it? You know, that, you know, It's not all just because it's the right thing. He's also just doing it because he needs to get out of there.
The element of coolness about it.
Best bit, Joe, was when he was like, stay calm, and he goes, I am calm because I'm talking to myself.
Oh yeah, that was brilliant.
And then the resistance, you know, are you with the resistance? I am with the resistance. I am with the resistance. Yes, I am the resistance. You know, it's like he just nails it. And his, and we're going to BB-8 later, but his interaction with BB-8 getting electrocuted, and then the thumbs up lighter stuff, and they're going to be iconic scenes. You know, the thumbs up lighter, for example, is used everywhere, isn't it? As GIFs on Twitter, when someone says, well done, or I agree with you, there's a BB-8 GIF with the lighter coming out now. So yeah, anyway, going back to John Boyega, an absolutely brilliant casting for me.
Yeah.
He nailed this. He nailed this. And there's a lot of doubt from people about the story of this guy, and people are really going into detail about criticizing the way he is, and, you know, as in, oh, wait up, Captain Phasma, you know, she said to him, you've been programmed since birth to do all this, why did you not do it, this and that and the other, and they're saying, well, if he's programmed since birth, what all of a sudden came over him, and, you know, why that can't be his first mission if he was since birth, you know, when some, do you get what I mean?
Yeah, and the other.
So for me, and this is out there, and I know people are going to disagree with this, for me, I would love it to be true. They've done a double switch. Like, you know, we're going to talk about Rey in a sec with the Jedi, the Force, and all that. But if you think about it, Snoke mentions a Force has been awoken to Kylo Ren, right?
Yeah.
And at that point, we've seen nothing at all forceful from Rey. Absolutely nothing. Nothing. We've just seen her eating and liaising with BB-8. That is it. Okay, mm-hmm. So we've seen nothing from her. Whereas from Finn, FN2187, by the way, which was also Princess Leia's cell block.
Oh, brilliant.
Okay, so FN2187 was her cell block in A New Hope. Which
some
is
people have too much time on their hands.
Absolutely brilliant. I know. But wasn't to say, basically, Finn, it's like a Force has awoken. Something moves in him. Pretty much similar to, you know, when, I know we're jumping, Rey basically mind tricks that James Bond, yeah?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And his body goes into some kind of a thing, you know, like it gets taken over. You see that with him when the blood goes against his helmet. There's something comes over him. And also, as soon as, at the end of that scene, when Kylo Ren's walking away after killing whatever that guy's name is, I don't even know what that guy's name was he killed, which character he was, and they even mentioned like some history between him and Kylo Ren, which no one the fuck knows where that is. So that's one hole that we probably need, will probably be filled later, but in like further episodes to come. But I actually think that when he looks at him, when he's just standing there, he feels something off him.
Well, he definitely does look at him and sort of lingers, doesn't he?
And stops, yeah. What is it? What is it? Because, and then he remembers his number when they said one of the stormtroopers has run off with the thing, and he goes, was it FN2187? Like,
true.
Do you get what I mean? There's points, little things that point to Finn having something. And has there ever been anyone with a lightsaber in any of these Star Wars that wasn't a Jedi? Like, has anyone ever handled one?
Yeah, Han Solo cut open the Tauntaun, but I don't think anyone's ever fought with one that I can remember off the top of my head.
Yeah.
My suggestion is Mace Windu's love child.
It could well be. I'm not going to doubt anyone on anything because it could be Lando on an affair with Leia.
Mace Windu would be. I know Jedi's lived for a long time and that, but Mace Windu would be getting on a fair. Yeah,
exactly,
bit,
Mace Windu. Sorry, that was like another generation.
Mace Windu might have been Mace Windu's ghost.
Oh my god, we're actually going into some Patrick Swayze movies. It's the wrong movie. Right, anyway, what did I say? I really hope because the posters try and sway you towards Finn being the Jedi, but obviously it turns out to be Rey, right? But yeah. I do have my little conspiracy theory on the side that he's going to be Force sensitive, and going forward that'll come out. But he doesn't know it, and he doesn't feel it. Because otherwise, why the fuck would he wake up? Can someone explain? Otherwise, it's just another pothole in the script for me. If it's not that, why does he wake up? How does he wake up? No one else wakes up.
Mm. Well,
do you get me? What's the answer?
Any program can have a glitch, can't it? And, you know, people are unique, and, you know, there'll always be people who are...
But that's a weak plot line, though, isn't it?
Well,
there's got to be something to it, though, Joe. I can't believe Star Wars would do something without there being something to it. Not after this long. Not after the planning. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
There's got to be something to him.
Don't get me wrong. I think you might be right there. He may be Force sensitive, and I can definitely see how that would be an interesting storyline. But equally to me, it's interesting if he's not. You know, because as we know from the past, not every powerful person in this universe or intelligent or resourceful person has to have that ability. You know, Han Solo didn't have that ability and things like that. But I know where you're coming from. It would explain how he suddenly awakened from this programming. But if it is his first mission and it is the first time he's seen that actual destruction, That could be quite a powerful thing to, if someone already had doubts, to change, you know. But all of this is great because it's more stuff to be revealed further down the line.
And I think he'll have a backstory, obviously.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, as you both say, I mean, that's a very, very good thing the first films achieved, that were so interested in these characters we've never seen before. We're actually interested in where they're from and where they're going to go next, which is great because in the prequels, generally, I had no interest in even some of the characters who I'd known for a long time, even seeing them young, you know. I'm probably being a bit harsh there, but I'm definitely much more interested in these characters. You both touched on Rey and Daisy Ridley's performance. Tell us a bit more about your thoughts on her, Gags.
I follow her on Instagram and she's hot, like, outside of the Rey character.
you're old enough to be a granddad, aren't you, Gags?
Fuck off.
Hey, wife listening to this.
Hey, the wife don't like Star Wars. Go away. No, she's a really good character as well. My favourite is Finn, okay? So the FN2187 is going to be big, going to be class, but she was very good too. I really like her as well. But it's very close between them. She portrayed it well. One thing that was a little weird in this movie, and I think we'll probably talk about it when we get to Kylo, is just how strong she became. She became very strong. And her backstory is going to be really interesting. And we're probably going to come to that later as well. But as a character, she pulled it off well. She's very good. There's a few doubts about her character in terms of she's supposed to be on Jakku for so long. Mm-hmm. And she, has been cleaning or slave, you know, has been what was she called? A scavenger. Scavenger. So she's just looking for parts and selling them and eating, you know, and stuff like that. And the thing you get from her is she knows that she's from, like, what is it, the Rebels or the Republic or whatever. She knows that she's from there because when you look at where she lives, she's got a helmet. Okay. Mm-hmm. She's also got that doll. Did you notice the doll? Yeah. The pilot doll thing. So she's got all these things. She knows she's from there, or she's had interactions somewhere with these type of people.
Or she aspires to that as well.
Well, this is it. She knows about them enough. Yeah. And the other thing is, she's also really good with that staff of hers. Now, where she got those skills, etc., is you don't know, do you? It's like, well, that's weird, because even though Luke was, you know, had the Force, he wasn't very good with a lightsaber. He knew nothing about how to wield any weapon. He was really weak. He had to be taught. Whereas this one, she's at an advanced stage in everything. She's good at, you know, she's awesome at flying already.
Yeah.
Unbelievably brilliant at flying. They never mentioned any history of her flying anywhere, whereas the others, they'd done some flying, you know. Anakin and Luke had done something. There was some history of them in the movies, talked about it at least. There was nothing to talk about her, although obviously she's a scavenger. She's working with those parts. She's working with parts and pieces and chips and all that. But yeah, there was lots of questions from me about her in terms of, I love the movie, I love her, I love everything about her, but there was just little questions of, wow, they've advanced her in this really far, you know, and she was doing all the mind tricks, etc., you know, the whole caboodle by the end, and you just have to ask questions. Was she advanced too quick, or how? What?
No, I definitely had a lot of the same thoughts. I wondered whether she was maybe too powerful too soon and things like that. But I suppose, as you say, she was a scavenger from a very young age. She perhaps had some sort of Jedi training. Obviously, we don't know, but that's one theory, and there were hints that that was possibly the case. And like you mentioned, some things, just if you are strong in the Force, some of the things you can do are advanced. I mean, Luke was clearly a talented pilot from the get-go, at least from where we've seen. I think he clearly done certain things on certain vehicles on this planet that he was proud of, and agreed, things like that. Mm. Bullseye and Wamprats and all that stuff. So I think you definitely have some advantages. And then just surviving from a young girl in such a harsh place, I imagine you'd have to be tough and resourceful, but I know what you mean. She was extremely powerful really quickly. So I think we'll probably come back to that later, maybe with some of our thoughts on that. What about yourself, Andy? What were your thoughts on Daisy Ridley and the character of Rey?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you on that. You know, she's been on her own for a while. She's probably had to toughen up through part of her life, and maybe, you know, how quickly she adapted to being a pilot is perhaps a hint to, you know, where her story lies in the future, you know, her backstory perhaps is a bit of a hint there, you know, of where she's originated from, shall we say.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes we can, obviously we're fans of the franchise and everything like that, and perhaps we can overthink things a little bit as well. But I mean, just as a character and how it was portrayed, I thought she portrayed it really well. I thought the character, she was it had a feistiness and it had a raw edge to it, and she seems to soften a little as it went along, you know, in terms of how she was with people.
Yeah.
And she just kind of warmed up, and I thought the chemistry between her and John Boyega on screen as well was actually pretty good. It was, you know, that thing between the two of them, it was quite believable, because, I mean, you know, it's easy to say that, how many films have you watched where, you know, there's supposed to be two characters who are interacting and there is no on-screen chemistry. And for two relatively unknown actors to get that chemistry, I think that was quite impressive. Yeah, for me, it's just positive. I thought overall good character, well, you know, well presented, not like Finn, not shoved down your throat. I thought it grew organically on you as the movie went on, and both of them have got that intrigue about them going forward, which is really important, because as much as they've pulled you into the movie, they've got to leave you hanging to want, make you want to come back again. And I think that's what them two characters especially have done, have provided you with some intrigue as to, right, okay, we've come this far, but why, you know, what's happened before that and where are they going next? And I think that's, you know, as much down to the story as down to how they've portrayed them as well. So, you know, credit to her, like John Boyega.
No, totally agree with everything you say there. I think you're right. They've got that intrigue and that chemistry between them, as you say, and like, you know, and ultimately likability. I think we clearly all like these characters and we want to know what happens to them. And I mean, speaking from my own perspective, and sometimes you just know what you like yourself. They had a really hard task to get me to want to like them and enjoy them in this film because of the way I love Star Wars, and there is a part of me quite resistant to new Star Wars and things like that, but they were so good and so likable and charismatic, and that chemistry, as you say, it just completely made me, you know, believe in them in this world and just enjoy watching them and, you know, as you say, want to see what happens next with them.
You're listening to the Anfield Index podcast channel.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The next character we're going to look at has been a bit more divisive, not as universally liked. It's Adam Driver's performance and the character of Kylo Ren. If you can start me off on this one, Andy, with your thoughts.
Well, to be honest, I wasn't as struck on him. Just that, not necessarily the performance, as the character. I don't know, maybe a mix of both, but he's the character itself, or the way that he's got it, he's portraying it, is so reminiscent of Anakin in, you know, sort of the latter episode 2, you know, a long way through episode 3, where it's kind of like this moody, petulant teenager that you, rather than you being fearful, you just kind of think, oh, you know, just dislike them. You know, not in a way that you're supposed to dislike the bad guy, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
As for the character itself, I mean, I thought he was unmasked too soon. That was probably my only negative on the movie, actually, watching it, was I thought he was unmasked too soon. And he didn't have... It almost kind of felt a bit weak from that point. And he didn't... I don't know, I didn't get that believability about him that he was, you know, this really all-powerful, menacing bad guy, more that he was just this really unpleasant, spoiled brat with powers. So, there might be more to come, you know, and I suppose we have to wait for the next one just to see where it goes with that one, that in the context of the full story, it might sort of bored out well, but initially, of the three characters, his was certainly for me the weaker performance.
I think a lot of people have had similar thoughts to that. What about yourself, Gags? What were your thoughts on Adam Driver and obviously the character Kylo Ren?
The character, firstly, I thought the voice was brilliant behind the mask. I thought it brought across really good. You know, it was his own voice masked, you know, played with a little bit, which was great. It sounded really good. It had it did come across as a scary type, you know, person at the start. The force is really strong. Again, we're seeing things, they've moved the force on 30 years on. He's stopping, you know, the bullet or whatever it is, the laser in midair, and then able to do other things. Whereas you saw Luke struggling to lift like a spaceship and stuff like that at times and shaking. And there's this guy who's just nonchalant with the force, lifting things. You know, it's just so easy. Like, Darth Vader used to drag people up in the air. He's dragging people towards him with the force, you know, and grabbing them and stuff. It's just going to another level, stronger. And it just feels, okay, that's fine. I wanted to see more with the force, to be honest, which is great. So the other thing with him was that there seems to be, it was different. He was a different character. They tried to make him play him out as a Darth Vader, but in fact, what they have portrayed is someone trying to be like Darth Vader. And what you need to understand is that he's actually having a battle within himself. He's saying, I'm feeding the light. I'm going towards the light. He said that himself in the movie. You've got to take those words. Those are the most meaningful words from him. The biggest dialogue from him in the movie was talking to himself, saying, I feel the light. Grandfather, save me. The other question is, where the fuck did he get Darth Vader's helmet?
Good. That must have been one hell of
on eBay. Yeah, I want the helmet, bastard. No, I'm joking. No, but the question's asked about his character is that he's very vulnerable. He is vulnerable because he's done some bad things. You don't know what's happened between him and Luke. His parents have split up because of him. He's obviously disowned his father and gone with Snoke and Supreme Stupid Leader, whatever they call him. but basically, there's a big battle within himself. And the unmasking was because there's a connection. There is a clear connection between him and Rey. There is a clear... I don't know if everybody else saw it, but I saw it. Mm-hmm. He's... Well, obviously, his force is so strong that he can read her mind at the start. He reads her mind and he picture... What does he say when he picturizes it? An island with the sea, with greenery. Isn't that where Luke was? Yeah. Okay, so there's some kind of connection between her and Luke, him and her, okay? Mm-hmm. There's something weird going on there. But he couldn't then control her because she got stronger.
Well, I think if you notice, she got stronger
when she was with him.
That's what I was going to say. Do you think it was him who, by doing that mind thing, that actually awakened the Jedi powers, or at least sped up the awakening? Because it seemed to be as he was doing that she seemed to lock onto his mind, didn't she? She locked onto his mind, and sort of he had to give up for a bit, didn't he?
She didn't realize she had any force until that point, which is, and she didn't display any force until that point, which is why I always think Finn has something in him, because it's not till like halfway through the movie that she's actually properly awakened or done something, or even you know, and at that point you think, okay, so she's got the force. There's definitely something going on with them too. They are either they're siblings or they're cousins or whatever. There's something connecting them. So, and from there he takes his helmet off because he's, you know, obviously trying to win her trust or whatever. But he feels something with her, I think. And then after that, his character goes a little bit downhill once he, like Andy said. You know, they took the mask off too early. He became human.
Yeah, he lost some of his power. That as someone watching him anyway, it lost a bit of its power and fear factor when, you know, particularly as Andy said, so early, we had to wait a long, long time to see underneath the mask with Darth Vader.
Yeah.
And obviously this was quite early and perhaps a bit of the mystique went quite quick.
But maybe and that's what it's supposed to be. Maybe he's not supposed to have the mystique. He's supposed to be. Right. I have a feeling there's going to be a switcheroo somewhere. There's going to be, I reckon he'll go light in the end. There'll be something weird.
I think it's quite a defining moment for him to take the mask off. So for me, for him, the point really for him to take the mask off for the first time should have been with Han Solo facing him.
Yeah.
You know, for me, that would have been then, yeah, there it is, father and son, yeah. And then he can look him in the eye, his father and son, before he sticks a blade in him. But, yeah, I just think they kind of lost a little bit of something there. But, you know, nothing's perfect, I suppose.
No, there's got to be a reason. Like I said, there's got to be a reason for it.
It is interesting as well, like you mentioned, Gags. I mean, this idea of a character who's conflicted.
Yeah, he's not Darth. He wants to be Darth.
You're right. He feels he's being corrupted by the good side. Whereas, as you say, until very late in the day, Darth wasn't that conflicted, you know,
no, it was
once
Luke.
He became Darth.
Wasn't it Luke that was conflicted? I'm going dark.
Yeah.
And this is the switch.
So yeah, it's
he's
like that
conflicted
reversal,
the light. So I like that. It's different.
I did. That's what I mean. That's another one of the things where there are similarities, and I know some people would say, well, that's a similarity because it's a reversal, but it's still a different story. You know, it's still a different
character. Totally different.
It brings up different questions, doesn't it? And I mean,
and it's got a weird ass lightsaber as well.
Yeah. Well, obviously I don't read, you know, sort of the expanded universe and stuff, not against it. It's just not my bag really, but the people who do, or the people who've maybe read up more than me, seem to suggest that lightsaber, the way it's like that, is because he's immature and doesn't have the proper skill to build a lightsaber the proper way. And that's why it's sort of unstable. And it has those extra almost, you know, side parts that they weren't done by design. They're almost accidental because he can't build it correctly.
Yeah, and he's not had the proper training.
True.
At the end, Snoke says, I need to train him more.
True,
yeah,
and it makes sense.
There really are a lot of people with too much time on their hands.
You're not wrong.
I'm positive on that.
There's three of them on this podcast, mate. So but you're right. I mean, even if you think back to as well, when Darth Vader meets, I think it's in Return, where Darth Vader meets Luke, he actually says to him, I see you've constructed a new lightsaber. And I think that was a mark of respect, you know, that he was recognising that he can do it. You know, it's not just a normal, it's a skill.
It's part of being, part of having the Force, is to create your own lightsaber.
Yeah, makes sense. Mm. All this Force talk, I suppose, and we've touched on it slightly, takes us to the next question, which is, you know, we touched on earlier a little bit, that's caused a little bit of, you know, criticism, some fans not happy about the fight between Kylo Ren and Finn, and then obviously with Rey following that. And essentially that Kylo Ren, obviously he's shown how powerful he is earlier on. And then this should almost be a mismatch, these battles, but he's actually, you know, he finds it hard, even initially. So what are your thoughts on that, Andy? Do you have any thoughts to that criticism, or do you agree?
For me, I think it's all just a part of the emerging story, really. Mm-hmm. You know, it was kind of a way of, again, of as has been mentioned, you know, the portrayal of the characters of the different stages of development that they are, of mastering, you know, these powers that they have. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it was essentially 2-on-1, but it wasn't, you know, so two of them are tagging out, you know, or unconscious, whatever you want. But I think you shouldn't read too much into it just yet, because we're so early into it, and it was so clear as well that, you know, because it was actually mentioned, wasn't it, by the Supreme Master, what was his name?
Snow.
That, you know, send for Kylo Ren, send him to me to complete his training. So it was clear he's not the finished article yet. True. And the other two certainly aren't. So I think people perhaps are just getting a bit, you know, over eager, and let it develop. Let's just see where this goes before we come back and, you know, really over dissect things.
Well, I took it as a wrestling thing. You both are wrestling fans, right?
Yeah.
So I painted it as you got to get basically, how do you defeat someone who's super, super strong or whatever? You've got to get them injured or have some kind of a disability. And he was hit by Chewie's blaster from distance, and he was banging his leg or his ribs or whatever it was, where he was bleeding, dripping, bleeding. So they gave him. So what they did was they built the weakness at the start when he's fighting John Boyega, Finn. Mm-hmm. So Finn hits him with one as well, doesn't he? He gets him on the shoulder, I think, or on the face, or wherever. I think it was on the shoulder. He gets him there as well. So basically, he takes a smack from him. But on the flip side, so you build someone and say, right, he's hurt. So that's how they've built it up to say that's why he was close to being defeated, because he'd already taken a big whack and he was bleeding profusely, this and that. The one question for me is, I've never ever seen one of those blasters make someone bleed in a movie. This is the first time in Star Wars that one person dies at the start and he's bleeding with a blaster and he puts it on Finn's face, and then Kylo Ren is bleeding from a blaster. Never ever have we seen blood from a blaster. True or not, I don't think we have. Yeah.
I can't recall it.
Yeah, so that's the first time in Star Wars that we've seen blood from a blaster. Anyway, another one of my little weird things. The next thing was that, so people are trying, that's how I reckon they've portrayed it. They've booked it, for example. Yeah. They've booked it as in, he's hurt, that's why he's weaker in the fight against them both. But the other thing is, right, and this is the bit that gets me, and I tried to convince myself that that was the thing, they'd make him, that's how he was weak. But you watch the start of the movie again and how strong he is with the Force and how he stops the laser. I'm sorry, but at the start, he throws Rey 50 yards. So why isn't he throwing Finn?
Yeah, that was my issue, really.
But the second thing you can say is that that's when he shows his naivety and his ego, that he wanted to defeat him in a lightsaber battle, teach him a lesson. So there's thoughts. You can take it other way, because you can take it as a character, can't you? You can say his character is that he's naive, impressionable, mm-hmm. and doesn't really know what he's doing, Kylo Ren.
Yeah, maybe it's just that, you know, he's also portrayed as very emotional and immature as well, isn't it?
So, exactly.
You know, he's maybe in the emotion. He's, you know, because they say, don't they, that the Force is, you know, you close your eyes and, you know, it's all calmness. Well, he's so emotional and so angry that it's nothing's flowing. It's all just reactionary, and he's you know, he's swinging for the hills. So,
yeah, I think you've made great points there. It's like I hadn't thought of them, but that helps me sort of reconcile it. I had a bit of an issue with the throwing Ray thing, and then he's, you know, with someone who's nowhere near as experienced, despite his injury, you know, he's
he wanted
in
to show him up. It's like a heel being really cocky, mm-hmm. trying to show up a baby face. You know what I mean? People that are watching the movie, there's a wrestling talk, but what I mean is somebody really being cocky and trying to show someone up that's weak in a battle.
Yeah. And what's the phrase as well, Gags? Isn't there a phrase in wrestling? It's not like a clean victory, is it, or something? What is it? Do you know that phrase?
Oh, God.
I think they have a phrase, don't they? If someone loses when there's been a bit of cheating or someone's injured with someone damages them. I think it's not a clean finish or something like that.
Yeah, it's just that. It wasn't clean.
Yeah,
it wasn't clean.
Yeah, and I think
you're
right.
This wasn't clean.
with the injury, and I think you might have mentioned this to me previously, one of the first persons I spoke to about it.
On the phone, yeah. We gasped for 40 minutes.
We had to, didn't we? They'd set up throughout the film, hadn't they? Just how powerful this crossbow was to make it even more. Look, he's been hit with this crossbow that's literally blown people across the way, and Han Solo was impressed with the power. So it does.
He just moved with it. He's so strong. He just stood there and took it.
True.
And it's just basically busted up his insides instead. Mm-hmm. I think it makes sense. But the thing is, people don't think like that. So we've given both sides of story here, how people could think that it is a flawed ending, but we've also then said how the character could just be that damn stupid, as in they're trying to portray him as all these, those, all the problems, you know what I mean, in his head.
And funnily enough, if we're going to be geeky, I watch a lot of mixed martial arts, and obviously that's real, unlike wrestling. And it happens in real life. You know, you see, and in boxing, I suppose, you see people ignore the trainers, and because they're emotional, they fight the other person's fight. And I know we're probably overplaying this now, but that's what he did, didn't he? As you say, if he hadn't have been immature, like Andy says, and he'd have just used his force powers despite being injured, he'd have beat both of them quite comfortably. But yeah. As you say, he was angry. He considered them a traitor. I think he screams at him, and he tries to do it by, you know, combat. And obviously that was his downfall, because it helped, you know, awaken, ultimately raise powers on an even grander scale. And I suppose that takes us to the biggest talking point of the film. We touched on it slightly earlier on, but we never fully got both your views. So firstly, if you guys could tell me about Rey, what do you think is her background and her heritage?
I'm conflicted with Rey. I don't know which way it goes, but there's signs you see in the movie that she's Han Solo's daughter, because the way she connects with him and the way they talk the same thing on the Millennium Falcon, how she connects with the spaceship itself, you know, everything about those scenes with him and how he is emotional towards her immediately shows some kind of connection. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
And that shows me something, because otherwise why would they even want to go there? Why would they even display or show any of that connection with him in that? And then she witnesses his death also. Okay. So yeah. That's another key. She's going to want to avenge his death, but there's going to be more to that. Now, the other thing is the little bits with Leia, where she knows she's Force, you know, she's got the Force, because she says, "May the Force be with you" at the end. Mm-hmm. You know, she knows she's got the Force. And the way she hugs her as well, the music of the hugging between Leia and, this is really, really geeky, by the way, the music in the background with the hug of Leia and Rey is the music of Han and Leia every time they kiss or hug. The room every time. So those little hints point me to that she's something to do with them, either fostered or the daughter or whatever, or she's Leia's kid, I don't know, from somebody else, I don't know, but it points to that. Then the other side of it is that Luke has something to do with it, because of and Obi-Wan Kenobi, because Obi-Wan Kenobi is speaking when she touches the lightsaber. And they actually had the original Alec McGuinness say Rey. And in fact, that was, they had to take that from Afraid and take the af and the dirt out and put Rey. And then it was Ewan McGregor doing the rest. These are your first steps.
Love it.
So those bits point to something to do with Obi-Wan. Why would he even say it? Why would he get involved with Rey? Okay, why would those things happen? And then in her vision, it's all about Luke. You know? So the lightsaber is calling her. She sees in her vision, she's in the Death Star, it's blowing up, she rolls out to the place where everyone's massacred. She looks up, she sees Luke with his hand pointing to R2-D2, which is a clear message that if you want to find me, I'm in R2-D2, right? So, which is the case in the end. And all those things happen in that thing, you know, and it's pointing her towards to go and find him. Now, what's the link there then? Then that's the next confusing part. They've left it so open that you just don't know what's going to happen. You don't know who she is, whether she's related to Kylo Ren, as in his sibling, because they were going down siblings again. Okay, I wouldn't be surprised if they went down siblings again and she joined the dark side, or he came light, whatever. And then she could be Luke's kid that he saved from the massacre, or someone Luke knows, one of the Jedi kids, you know, that he was chaining. Mm-hmm. And then she could be a descendant of Obi-Wan that Luke's again saved. So many angles here, Joe, that, and there's so many hints pointing to all of them that you just couldn't select which one. But the strong ones are with Leia and Han for me in the movie.
Sure. And what about you, Andy? Obviously, Gags gave a really good summing up of at least some of the different possibilities there. Do any of those ring true for you, or have you got a different thought on who her background is?
It's like a tombola to pick from, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, for me, it's like the kind of the obvious one is possibly that it's, you know, Luke's secret daughter somewhere along the line. That's almost, you know, it kind of looks that way. But then there is a lot of, like Gag said, there is so much ambiguity to it. But that's part of the intrigue, isn't it? You know, you don't want to give it away and make it too obvious. But you're going to throw some little soft hints here and there. So you're kind of torn in between. And when a movie gets you thinking that way, then it's winning. You know, that's the whole point, isn't it? Succeeding.
Yeah,
but
no.
It does make me wonder if there's a little bit of a curveball in there that, you know, is she Kylo's twin sister? And for some reason, have they, you know, did they split them at birth and secretly hide one away? You know, kind
I think
of
there's an
8-year
difference, dude. I think apparently there's an 8-year difference.
Right.
Between
them. Well, you know what I mean?
So,
it was
but they're hidden her. They could have hidden her, yeah?
Yeah. You know, and kind of like harping back to, you know, Luke and Leia being split at birth and
I've got to interrupt a bit. Do you mean the actors there, Gags? Or
no. There's been some talk. Yeah. On forums, is that there's an 8-year gap in age between them two.
That's not obvious in the movie.
It's not. And the other hint is that Leia keeps saying there's too much of his grandfather in him. And they said that when he was a kid as well. I saw too much of his grandfather. If that's the case, then they could have hidden her from start because they expected.
Yeah, but I don't know whether. Would maybe Han recognize her and would Leia recognize her of who she was and would their reactions be slightly different? I don't know, but as long as they don't go down the road where it's, you know, Luke and Leia's and they don't go down that territory, please.
I've just realized what you said then. Yeah, we don't need none of that.
I doubt it with it being a Disney movie.
No, I wouldn't have thought so. I wouldn't have thought so. I think the wheels would come off the franchise if that was the case. I think you're right there to avoid that. I think it's hard because it's J.J. Abrams, but obviously he is sort of, you know, it's still got some Lucas in there. And Lucas called it Star Wars The Chronicle of the Skywalker Family. And I'd be shocked if they deviated too much from that. And I know obviously Leia, you know, doesn't have that name, but she's still a Skywalker. But I think when we think Skywalker, we tend to think Luke. And I just think with the lightsaber calling to her, as you say, and obviously when she touched it, a hell of a lot of it was about Luke. And as you say earlier on, Gags, when Kylo Ren looked into her mind, he could see that island, which again is Luke. And I think as well, she had an X-Wing pilot toy that she made herself and a helmet like Luke's. And I think all those things together, plus Obi-Wan, who obviously was Luke's first trainer, you know, in the ways of the Force. I think for me, it's either Luke's daughter or, as you mentioned, maybe someone he was really fond of who he was training initially, but...
But it just doesn't explain why she linked up with Leia and thingy so much. Do you get what I mean? It just doesn't. I don't understand.
Well, they'd be the auntie and uncle, wouldn't they?
I suppose. But it was more of a father and daughter type click. You know, being a dad to a girl, it was more like a. Yeah, do you get what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah,
again,
I know
it's
what
just,
you're saying.
It's just that it's just nice. I think that they've done something that's making us think both ways.
True,
you know,
true.
Because I think they'll curveball it again. Mm-hmm. They will. We're all thinking Luke, and then they go, "Nah, she's kind of insisted. It's fine."
I think you're right. Or none of those at all.
Just
a normal girl who's blessed with this power, which is a very interesting story in its own right.
She could have been trained by him, and he saved her.
True. So that'll be interesting, and obviously we've touched on that, but I know we could go on all night, us three, talking about that, but it was nice to hear your thoughts. I'd now like to hear what your favourite moment or scene from the film is. I know that's a really hard question, but if you can come up with one, that'd be great, Gags.
Can I just say before we go that before we do this, that the one good thing about the movie was that they kept it to less CGI in terms of background,
and
it was shot very nicely. Mm-hmm. Some really beautiful scenery and stuff, and back shots, and everything was done naturally, and it made it a different. It made it an original again.
Yeah.
You know, one of the originals, and that was one of the reasons why it felt authentic and original Star Wars, because it wasn't cities and sitting on all these things flying around and up and down and nonsense going on. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And too many CGI characters, like what was her name? That one character.
Oh, in this? Maz?
Maz, yeah. So there was only her, really, that was kind of a new character that was like that, and she wasn't too bad, so it was a small role. But yeah, anyway, sorry, I just wanted to make sure that we got that in the pod, because
I thought
it was very important that it was a great part. But best scene, favourite scene, there's loads, obviously, you could go through anything with Han Solo in and Chewie, but I think the bit that I love the most, and finding out afterwards that it was James Bond, really killed
cool,
it. I absolutely loved the Force where she mind tricks him, especially where she fails the first time. And I like how they've changed it, that when someone gets mind tricked now, their body kind of stiffens up, so you know, and there's a little noise, there's a little sound of it that goes zzz. Like, as soon as she did it, there was a zzz. If you watch it again, you'll see a zzz, and the body's just stiffen. And I love that, because it's telling you, it's showing you, it's clear. And I just love the whole scene of her, you know, having the Force, and she's so clever. There's questions how she got so powerful so quick, which we've talked about, but the use of it was great in there. Especially Kylo Ren's reaction afterwards, where he bashes everything, and those two stormtroopers come around the corner and just turn around and walk off. Yeah, I loved it.
They got rather the dodge, didn't they?
They
knew best to approach them. Now that was a brilliant scene. You're right. I couldn't agree more. What about you, Andy?
I'm going to be geeky here. After convincing myself I wasn't a geek, I'm thinking I am. And mine really is the scenes between the X-Wings and the TIE fighters, with it being in daylight. There was just something about seeing them in daylight, you know, them battles that you're used to seeing in space. I don't know what it is. I can't really explain it, but it just touched me that it's something, you know, as a fan for what, you know, God knows how 30 something years, a lot more years than I care to remember, you know, to see them battling in daylight, it just completely changed the whole complexion. And it was just fascinating to see for me. Just one of them daft things. But I think along with that, probably the most defining scene of the movie, though, for me was Han Solo, the death of Han Solo. That was, you know, you've killed Han Solo. You can't do that.
Hard to believe, isn't it?
we can't go without talking about that, can we? I mean, my daughter, when that happened, I'd already seen it once. So when my daughter, she shed a tear because she absolutely loves Han Solo. So, you know, when he just sliced him up and then threw him off, she just was like, no, Dad. How can they do that? And I was like, darling, they did it to Obi-Wan, you know, kind of happened. That something normally happens like this in a movie. They've got to have the main character have something to fight for, something to avenge, you know, something to go for. This is what happens in movies, you'll understand. And she was like, it was hard for her to take. And yeah, it's a good scene. It's a very good scene, you know. And the best part of that scene, Joe, is the sun is shining on his face, and they're sucking out the energy of the sun, and he's looking like he's going light side. And this is, again, really geeky, sorry, but as the sun fades and it goes dark on his face, he then stabs him. And it was brilliantly directed in that the dark side, you know, the sun goes out, his face, the sun's shining on his face, and as soon as that shadow comes over and it's gone dark, the dark side's here. bang.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's such a clever, subtle little thing to put in, isn't it?
Beautiful.
I think you're right. That's
exactly how you got to watch it.
You made that point. That's really clever. Yeah.
Yeah. It's how you bring across the light and the dark. The whole thing is about light, dark, light, dark, light, dark, and that in the movie is one of the key moments of light, dark, and his battle.
Yeah.
He wants to be dark. This is him proving he's dark. And then he's got too cocky, obviously, and then gets his ass handed to him. But but yeah, sorry, I'm trying to put humor into a serious scene here. Yeah, he just, it was, there's so many parts we haven't even talked about, Joe, like Poe and BB-8, for God's sake. Like, we've got to talk about these two characters, dude. Doesn't matter how long you go, just go.
Go on, then. I'll go
BB-8. I'll let Andy do Poe.
Go on, then.
BB-8 is the star of this movie. I can't believe we waited since 70 minutes in to wait to talk about BB-8. The stuff with BB-8, we mentioned him earlier on, but everything about him, the way he moves, he's real as well. It's not a person in a droid. It's actually a droid they've built. You know,
I think it's a droid and a puppet. I don't think it is.
I think they've rolled it out on. They've rolled it out into thingies. I don't think there's a person in it.
No, I think for a lot of shots it's the droid, but there is also a puppet version as well.
Oh, is there? I didn't know that.
Fairly sure. I wouldn't bet.
I think
they
built. I think the news is that they built something like that. You know, like how they built the toys and stuff. They built a bigger version, and but basically, it's such a clever little thing.
It's great, isn't it?
It's got personality. Like, I know R2-D2 had personality with the way he used to, like, jump, you know, step side to side and do the dee-dee-dee and then move his head around. But they've gone advanced on personality with this droid. He just is brilliant in terms of mannerisms. Like, how they get a droid to have mannerisms, this one does. And the way he picks, you know, he's got these little strings or whatever they are, the things that he can balance and stuff and pull himself up and down off things, and the lighter, the electric shocks, you know, they just added so much to him.
With its nosy as well.
Yeah.
Peeps out from behind Han Solo and things like that, or when it was sad and its head slumped, when it thought Poe had been killed, and, you know, its glee when it realised Poe's still alive. As you say, it's got personality and character, and, you know, it may even have topped R2-D2 for me, and that's saying something. You know, they've done such a great job with BB-8, you're absolutely spot on there. What about you, Andy, either on BB-8 or Poe or both?
It's hard to add anything on BB-8. Gags covered everything there. It was, that cheeky little R2-D2 type droid. It's one for the kids, isn't it? But then again, you, as an adult, you know, you loved it as a kid, and then you revisiting it, and it is that fun again. And like you've said earlier as well, Joe, that as longtime fans, you kind of, you can't help it, but you're almost resistant to new characters. Mm-hmm. But all these characters have worked, and he was another one that's worked, and like Poe as well. I mean, we didn't see him an awful lot in the movie, but the parts that he played were, I think he had an element of Han Solo about him, you know, that charisma, that
comedy at the start.
Yeah, that little bit of something about him, you know, that Jack the Lad type character. And I think there's more to come from him. I think he's a character that'll emerge as it goes along by the looks of it. And again, just done really well. I mean, I'm not sure the guy's name who's portraying him.
Oscar Isaac.
Yeah.
That's it. He's portrayed it really well. He's got it across. Everything is just, you know, it just sits right. You know, less is more. You didn't see much of him, but that sets it up for the future. But what you did see of him, it was used well. And I think he made an impact, even though he wasn't in a lot of scenes. So, again, it's just, you know, such a successful movie in so many different ways.
Yeah, no, you're right.
He's going to be a big part, I think, Joe. I think he'll play a big part coming up in the future and in the next few movies, Poe.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
I hope so.
Yeah, he's a really, he was only supposed to have a small role in this movie, And in the end, he impressed, I think, JJ so much that they introduced the role, which is why he's probably small at the moment. But then it becomes bigger. So, yeah, I think there's a lot to come from Poe, and it should be good. It should be good. But it's like you said, there's very similar. There's similarities. Him and Kylo Ren have got history now as well, which is something to be, you know, something to take forward. So they've had an altercation. And he was very comic at the start, wasn't he? Like, who's talking? Me talking? You talking? Who's talking?
It's so quickly into the film, and you only just met this character, and straight away you like him after that bit, don't you? And you can see, like Andy said, he's got that cockiness, and I love that where he says to Finn, "I can fly anything," and I just love that. It's like, you know. And because of his charisma, a character like that could come across as unlikable, maybe, but you instantly warm to this character. And I think you touched on it before. He was originally going to be killed off, but they were so impressed with him that they thought, we just can't kill this character off. He's brilliant. So I think you're right. I think there's big things. Obviously, he's becoming a superstar, Oscar Isaac, and it'll be great to have him in future episodes of Star Wars, because he definitely brings a hell of a lot to the table. That leads us on now to pretty much the last question, really. And we've just talked favourite scenes. This was my favourite scene. You know, just watch this scene so many times.
I know what this one is as well.
Oh, yeah, it's the final scene where Rey comes face to face with Luke Skywalker. What were your thoughts on that scene, Andy?
I loved that. I just, the way it was done, the fact that they didn't put any dialogue to it as well,
yeah.
I thought just actually added to it. It just gave it, you know, it was a bit deeper. It just had more to it. Something different about the whole Luke Skywalker character, wasn't it? The look on his face, everything. Even the little thing there of, you know, he hasn't got the glove on anymore, and it was the foot, you know, just, it was the bionic hand. It was just a real, that was the touch back to your childhood right there and then, you know, the link between the two, you know, really, really cemented and setting everything up for the next one. It was, as that movie came to a close there, my immediate thought was, oh, I'm going to have to wait to watch the next bit now. You know, I was like, I can't believe I'm going to have to wait till I've seen that, what happens next. And that is, that's probably the best compliment you can pay a movie, really, isn't it? As it comes to a close, you know that it's part of an ongoing story. You just can't wait now for the next part. So I thought it was just such a great ending. It such a smart and succinct, beautifully done everything, you know, however you want to put it. It was just perfect, absolutely perfect.
Yeah, that totally the same experience for me. And as you say, you know, the biggest compliment you can pay to the first film of a new trilogy anyway is that it finishes, and straight away you're thinking, when is that next film out? And that's massive. Exactly how I felt, and massive. Clearly how you felt as well, Andy. Can you tell me your thoughts on that final scene with Luke, please, Gags?
I just thought Obi-Wan Kenobi, mate. First thing, when you see his face, you think Obi-Wan Kenobi. He looks rough, old, but he looks stronger. You know, he doesn't look that baby-faced kid. That did sometimes come across a little bit weak, you know, in the first few episodes, first episode or so. And now you could see a wise man standing there. And that's going to bring a lot to the next episode, because you've lost Han Solo. But the rumor is that a lot of the second episode is going to be flashbacks as well. So Han Solo will be back. So there'll be a lot of flashbacks with Luke and him. And obviously then the story will go on with Luke. So that'll be very, very interesting to see. And again, like you said, you both covered it so well. It's the perfect end. You kind of regret a little bit to say, I wish they'd showed him at least speaking, or he said something, but it leaves it in you, like you're saying, yep, okay, we got one character's gone, but we didn't see this one at all. I can't wait to see this one now. The whole second movie is going to be with him. The first one with his Han Solo, and the second one's going to be with him. So I think they've done well. I think, again, there'll be a baton passed on to the newbies from Luke next. So, he might die next.
Well, I think it's one of them, isn't it? I mean, I had a similar reaction to you when I seen him. It was that sort of so reminiscent of Obi-Wan. And, you know, we waited so long. I think in the film, Luke Skywalker's become a mythical sort of character. And he is in real life as well, in a way. And we waited so long to have a film with him in. And then we have to wait right through this film for him. And it's so powerful, like for me anyway, and clearly for you guys, when it gets to this breathtakingly beautiful island and the slow descent up to meet this character who you've waited for years to see again. And you've then waited through this over 2 hours long film just to get a glimpse of him. And then that moment where they're both looking at each other was just a hairs on the back of the neck moment for me, and just the perfect end to a great reintroduction to this Star Wars universe. And I think that's probably the perfect end for this pod, really. So thanks to you both for joining us. I'll start with you, Gags. Have you got anything to plug? Any superstar legends on any of your shows lately or anything like that you might want to plug?
If you've missed AI 100 and 101, then definitely go and have a listen to those. Those are very proud of those podcasts with a legend who's amazing to interview. At times, you're overawed because he's so strong. Such a strong personality. A dream come true for me. So yeah, please do go listen to those. They're great. There's so many other shows out at the moment. Yeah, the Global are doing some happy birthday ones for AI, which the first one got me really emotional on today. They talk so much about their origins on AI. And if you're new and you've not heard how these people got started or became part of the team, there's some really good stories. I suppose probably not as interesting to some of you than it was to me, because a lot of it was about me as well. So it was probably the pod is a lot more meaningful to me, but nevertheless, it's still very interesting to listen to how they all got started. But I just want to say thank you to those guys and Kaylin and co, all of those that took part in that pod. That was a fantastic podcast for me to listen to. It's probably one of my favourite ones now.
Oh, great. It sounds fantastic. I can't wait to listen to that. And obviously, I echo your thoughts. The John Barnes, two episodes with John Barnes on, and, you know, dropping wisdom left, right and centre, and just, you know, brilliant to listen to. And, you know, if you love Liverpool, then you love John Barnes, and you need to listen to those episodes. And obviously, as Gag said, The World Lads and so many other great pods on the AI channel. So please download that too. And also the Reds Review, which if anyone's listening, doesn't listen to that, Andy's the host and does it brilliantly. And it gives a different perspective to the Liverpool scene for me, because it gives you that bit of space. It's not immediately after the game, so you can see it more in the context of the month and how the season's, you know, developing. And it's another must listen. Andy, have you got anything coming up? You any other pieces or anything you want to plug other than the Reds Review, of course?
Thanks for that. That's great. I just thought actually we've come this far, and we didn't really speak about the First Order too much.
You're right.
I was thinking, probably not much to talk about the First Order, Andy, because they're a confused bunch of motherfuckers, to be honest, aren't they?
Actually, do you know what got me?
Restart the pod. Here we go.
I'll be very quick, I promise.
No,
like, go on, mate.
When I rewatched the movie, when I watched it the second time, the First Order scenes actually kind of, they involved for me like imagery of the Nazis.
Yeah,
you know, right, that opening scene of the storming the village and killing people. But what really got me was that scene where there was the guy giving the really impassioned speech, you know, that maniacal, yeah, you know, speech. And it was just so reminiscent of, you know, that old scene of in Nuremberg where, you know, yeah, the ships, the buildings, the red banners, all the troops amassed. And I just thought that imagery, you know, that's really like quite smart in a way, you know, what he's done there. Mm-hmm. I just something that was clever that I I just realised we hadn't even mentioned. But anyway,
I avoided it because I think I always end up calling them New Order and stuff like that.
So I think I was the New World Order. NWO. No, there's a bit of confusion in the whole thing, to be honest, because there's the Resistance, there's the Republic, there's the First Order. You know, but what the hell is going on with that? There is a bit of confusion in the film. Why are the Republic and the Resistance together? Why is there a need for? Isn't the First Order like the Republic? Or what's going on? You know, that part of it for me, big question marks. There needs to be gaps filled. Yeah, hopefully,
I think there will be, won't there?
I'm sure it'll all be answered next time round. But anyway, on terms of stuff coming up and whatnot, if you want, you can catch me on Twitter at @armdarmchair. I'm writing regular for EPL Index.
Woo.
So you can catch me quite often rattling out the articles there on various bits and pieces. But yeah, still write for AI here and there, and of course still doing the Reds review, and it's great. I love doing it. It's great. We have some great guests. Just I love the different perspectives that we get, and like you say, you know, you can take it all in from over the course of a month and time to maybe digest a few things. So the next Reds review, we're actually going to have the guys off the Academy pod, Drinkle and Nathan Stalker. So we'll get a bit of Academy stuff mixed in with being able to talk about the League Cup final and everything that happens through February. So it's such a fun pod to do. I have fun doing it, and it's just another part of the great thing that is AI.
Couldn't agree more. And just to anyone listening still, thanks for listening. As you know, AI has got so much great football content, but of course it's got so much non-football content. You know, pretty much something for everyone. Please download the AI channel. You've got wrestling, TV, comics, you know, you name it, it's got something for everybody, and you'll find something you like. So please download it. If you have any feedback for me, any film suggestions, or anybody fancies being a guest, please contact me on Twitter at, which is @Joe_Simpson_WolfTicketsLFC. Thanks to you all for listening, and thanks to my two great guests. Thank you.
Thank you.
The Force is strong in my family. My father has it. I have it. My sister has it. You have that power too, Chewie. We're home.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.